Hello and thanks for listening to RTÉ Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormick. In this episode, I'm talking to flute player Matt Molloy, who's been a major figure and influence in Irish traditional music since the 1960s. He's a former member of the Bothy Band and Planxty and a current member of the hugely successful group The Chieftains. In this programme, he talks about all of those groups as well as the many duets he's been involved in over the years, and lots more, including his own background in music and the time his flute visited space. But he starts here by explaining where the music came from.
My father's people came from just outside Ballymote, Lissanani, Marlow. It's about 2 miles outside of Ballymote in South Sligo. And my grandfather, John Molloy, he played. And my father played in the early stages, and my uncle Matt, he also played. So yes, goes back quite a bit, and my son is now playing. Peter is playing now, yeah. So it's nice, yeah.
In Donegal, like, the fiddle is the Donegal instrument, but in, say, Roscommon, like, why the flute? Why were there so many flutes around, do you think?
I have no idea. I mean, it was just a thing. South Sligo, North Roscommon, you know, parts of Mayo, the flute is the thing, you know, like, the around surrounding areas around Ballyhadrin, where I come from, around Clunch area, that one time, practically there's a flute in every house, you know, and, like, the players, like, well, good, bad and indifferent, but they could all play for a dance, or, you know, when the house dances were going at the time. Yeah.
And was your father, did your father play a lot?
No, he, politics got in the way, I think, in the 20s, and after that, then he went to the States, and he played for a while in the States. He went to America with Paddy Kilorden. They were neighbours and they were friends, and I think they roomed together. Oh, I don't know, for the first year or two that they were in New York. But he gave it up after. He stopped playing, and for different reasons. And it was only when I started off, I was the youngest, so it was only when I attempted to play the whistle, I went to the De La Salle School in Ballyhadrin, and they had a marching band, a fife and drum marching band, so you started off on the whistle when you were around seven or eight, which I did, or I was trying to. And I think he just got fed up listening to me making mistakes and whatever else with these marches. So he purchased 2 Clark's whistles and started playing the marches for me and went from there to polkas and simple reels and jigs. And yeah, that's, and then he had a flute that he hadn't played for ages that he had brought back from the States. So I started off on that. I attempted to have a go at that, and then I got fixated with the bloody thing, and I'm still at it.
Did he start playing back then again when you were playing?
Well, he played a bit at home, but he never played out, no. He was very conscious of the fact, like, that he hadn't played for 30 years or 40 years or whatever, you know. Then, which was a problem then, he had a plate, his teeth, you know, and it interfered with his embouchure. And that really annoyed him, so he felt he wasn't doing it justice, so he wouldn't play outside. But he was very quick to correct me when I was deviated from the old way of the way he had learned the tunes from his predecessors. You know, he was very quick to tell me, no, that's not the way I taught you that.
And do you know, say, Paddy Kilorden, if they went over together, Paddy stayed, do you know why your father came back?
Well, I don't know. He for some reason here, my mother and they got married in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania. My mother was from Mayo, she's from Shry near Newcastle, on the Sligo Mayo border, but County Mayo. But they decided to come back. He was there for 10, 12 years, I think, in the States, and just decided to come back, you know. And principally, he refused to take citizenship when he was over there, which would have made it very easy for me in latter years. I'd have a green card or whatever, but there you go.
What about, so, music around you? So you were in the band and you had your father, but were there other musicians around, or were you listening to 78s, or what? Where was the music coming from?
There was all of that. I was fortunate enough that my next door neighbour was a man by the name of Padder Noon, and he was a strong Gaelgor. He was an Irish language teacher in the local technical school where I went to school after the La Salles, and he was also played the fiddle, so he was very keen on promoting the language and the music, and there were a few of us, of like-minded young people that were playing traditional music, a little bit. So he was great. He got us together, and he used to organise feshes every year in the town, in Balladreen. And he was a great goer, you know. And he brought us to the feshes and the early flakyols, and he brought us in his own car, and he was great. And then you wouldn't do it today, but he had a trailer that if he couldn't get any other cars in the vicinity to give us a lift to the feshes or flas, he'd throw bales of hay into the bottom of the trailer and put tarp over the top of it. And of course, there was a scramble. Everybody wanted to get into the trailer. Nobody wanted to get into the car. So I have more memories of spins on that trailer than I have than some of the feshes. But he was a great man. Yeah, he was great. And my father was very enthusiastic too, with regard to the flas and whatever else. So I went through all of that. I used to go to do the competitions and all that sort of thing for a good few years.
And of those musicians on the 78s, who would have been the ones that made the big impression?
Oh, well, of course, like the Michael Coleman would be the foremost, I'm sure. And then, for me, then Paddy Kilorden, because there was a family connection. And then, of course, James Morrison was a brilliant, incredible player as well. And then, of course, like flute players like John McKenna and people like that. I did. I met him. I was fortunate. The last time he came back to Ireland from America, I think it was around 1961, and he hadn't met my father for years, 30 years or whatever it was, you know, something crazy like that. So there was a party organised in the house, and Paddy was there, of course, and played, and all, you know, Fred Finn, Peter Horn, Willie Coleman, Padder Noon, and all some of the local musicians, and a good time was had by all. And I remember playing the Humours of Lissadell with him, and I didn't realise until last year that it had been recorded. It was recorded by Frank Mulvey, now dead, who was married to my first cousin, Anne Molloy, Anne Mulvey. So that only surfaced last year.
How big a role did the radio play in learning music when you were growing up, Matt?
Starting off in the early days, Ciarán MacMahona's programmes were essential listening in our house. God, you kept quiet. My father was, and of course I was into it as well. Cuálta Tíre and the Jabba Journey work. That was amazing work. It was amazing stuff, and it kept you hooked into, you know, what's happening. And then, of course, like when the flats started off, you know, in the early days, like they were great too. You realised that you weren't alone, you know, you weren't in isolation, you know, like in towns and villages around the country, you had maybe a couple of families that were into the music and, you know, they stuck with it. And then when the flats started, then you realised there's a whole world of music out there, you know, that. And his introduction, you were listening to Leo Rousham and Seamus Ennis and Willie Clancy and Johnny Doherty and the Kerry Players, and then of course Eddie Maloney and people like that, Joe Burke and whoever, and from Galway, and yeah, and of course the Dublin Players, Tommy Potts and Tommy Reck, and you know, you can go on. So it just opened your mind. Open my mind and listened. I remember listening to Paddy Carty, and I really thought, you know, wow, when I heard him first, you know, it was great flute player.
To Dublin, but you didn't come to Dublin as a musician first, did you?
No, I was fortunate enough to get a job with Aer Lingus as an apprentice aircraft mechanic technician, and they gave a very extensive course at the time, which was 4 years full time in Bolton Street. There was an aeronautical section in Bolton Street School of Technology. All told, I was with Aer Lingus for 11 years, so, and then the bug really bit, so I went off with the body band then, I think it was. So.
And was that, so you left the job, you just left, so it was a full-time job, was it?
No, I was a bit reluctant because I was just, I just got married and I had the usual, the mortgage and all the rest of it, so I got a 6 month leave of absence, but once that 6 months was up, of course I tried to go for another 6 months, which I got, and I can't remember whether I got the third one or not, I think I did, but then I was politely told, like, I mean, make up your mind, son. So I did, and went professional with the body band.
Landed in Dublin at a kind of an amazing time, didn't you? There was a sort of a very vibrant music scene happening at the time.
It was great, yeah. Oh, you had, yeah, it really was. Well, initially, it was 1964, you just had the Piper's Club on a Saturday night in Thomas Street, and you had the Church Street Club then. So I sort of gravitated towards the Church Street Club because there was a lot of expats, if you like, from the Sligo, Leitrim area, like there, John Egan, a lovely flute player from, I think he was from Riverstown originally, but anyway, he was he sort of ran the Church Street. So I used to go there. Well, for the first year, I didn't go anywhere because I was so taken up. I had a lot of studies to do and had a lot of catch up to do, but Johnny persuaded me to go down to the Church Street Club, my brother, and he used to drop me down there. And then I was lucky then that I had a neighbour in Santry, and where I was staying at that time, Paddy Fallon. He'd have been well known in traditional circles, and he played Bowron, and he used to tell jokes, and he used to do a lot of MC for the Coltus tours. He'd do MC. He was a lovely man, and he'd bring me down as well. And he'd, you know, so that got me going in Dublin, got me started, I suppose, back again.
And how did you hook up with the Bothy Band then?
Well, it's a small scene in particularly then. Anyway, it was very, everybody knew everybody else, and I think we did one or two shows for Gaelin, and I met up with Trina and Micheál O'Donnell. Like Donal was on the scene, and yeah, you know, everybody, like Liam. Like when I started playing in Dublin after a year or two, like Liam O'Flynn was just had arrived in town as well, and Tommy Peebles, and so they were the people who were hanging out with, and just between one thing and another, we had a concert in I think the first one was where Paddy Glacken was playing fiddle with us initially. In Trinity, I think we had a show there, and then we did a few shows out of town, you know. But we just made weekends out of them, and whatever we got, we spent. I'm afraid.
And what kind of reaction did those first Bothy Band gigs get? I mean, did you know that there was something sort of different about what you were doing?
Well, not initially, but. But yeah, I suppose we got taken aback, you know, and the younger crew really liked what we were doing, and you had Micheál and Trina and Donal, and that's not a compliment. Like, they were part of the very successfully weaved through the music, if you like, and they took it as far as I thought it should go, you know. That was a nice point. It had never been done before to that extent. It'd never been done properly, I don't think. But Donal and Trina and Micheál, they were really good. Like, and we had myself and initially, well, Paddy Glacken, and then we had Tommy Peebles for a year, and then Kevin Burke on fiddles, and there was myself and of course Paddy Keenan on pipes. You know, so yeah, we were. We worked off one another very well, you know, musically, and we're still good pals. We're still good friends. And I'm still very proud of how we did musically, yeah.
And were you sorry when it came to an end?
Well, yes, but it was sort of inevitable, really, you know. I mean, we were pretty burned out, and we were maybe burning the candle at both ends, and we weren't very manageable, I'm afraid. That's the way things go, you know. Mind you, some of the rehearsals were short lived. the attention span sometimes would, you know, yeah. If you had 2 hours, you were going well. This thing is sitting in all day. Yeah, it wasn't for us.
You got a lot done in 2 hours. Then.
God, I tell you, we did. You know. after the party band finished, I think maybe 6 to 8 months or 9 months afterwards, then Planxty reformed, the original Planxty reformed, and they asked me along. So I was quite comfortable with it because I knew Christy and, well, Liam was a great pal of mine anyway, so. And of course, Donald had been with me and with the Batty Band, so it was very easy to sit in. And of course, Andy Irvine, yeah. I did maybe about a year, I think. We rehearsed the After the Break album. We went away for a week and put the lot together, and then toured on, I don't know, a load of countries around Ireland and England, Scotland, and into Europe. And
a week, it was running a week.
I think we were there for about a week, yeah. We rehearsed it and had it together, and then it's always a good thing to, what sounds great in a rehearsal room, you know, you can be very disappointed when you go out in front of a crowd and you don't get the reaction that you thought you were expecting, you know, so say, okay, we have to rejig this a little bit and reshape it, and that's kind of what happened. It's good. It's a good way to do things too, I think, yeah.
With the Chieftains, there were so many collaborations and so many people involved and so many great projects and massive tours and so many things. But one of the records we had in my house when I was growing up was the Chieftains in China. And I was thinking about it. It was 1983, I think, you went to China.
That was 83, yeah. There were no musicians going out to China at that time.
No.
We were the first to play on the... we were the first band to play on the Great Wall, apparently from the West, yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it was fascinating. I mean, you know, you had the bamboo curtain, if you like, and it was a cultural exchange. And Paddy worked it anyway that we were able to get Brian Masterson, recording engineer, one of the top men. We were fortunate enough to get him to China with us and record the proceedings. So that was the double album that we recorded.
When you were there, you worked with the Chinese musicians as well. What was that like?
Yeah, that was interesting. We'd have 3 or 4 days in each city, and we'd rehearse with the local orchestra, the folk orchestra. But each, like the flute section, would have we'd go to dinners every evening and whatever, and I'd have a bunch of flute players at my table, and Sean would be at another table. Sean Keane would be at another table with a bunch of fiddle players or air hoop players or whatever, and Paddy, of course. But it was a lot of fun, yeah. Paddy saved the day, really. The tonic salsa. I mean, there was a lot of confusion, and it transpired that they understood the tonic salsa, and Paddy grew up with that, so there was straight away there was a connection. So no bother to Paddy, he'll find a way.
Thank you. your colleague in the Chieftains, Sean Keane, you've played with him loads and you made, you know, you've recorded with him, one of the records being Contentment is Wealth. Yeah. What's Sean Keane like to play with? I mean, he's a fantastic fiddle player, obviously.
Well, he's a remarkable man, and he's a big, quiet giant, you know, he's a big, tall man, and he's an incredible player, and doesn't make any fuss about it. He's very laid back, and he's just a brilliant fiddle player. But there again, it's we've been, and still are, we've been friends for years and years, you know, so from going way back to the early, back to the 60s, really, you know, me, you know, and his brother James. It was sad when he stopped playing with the Chieftains. He decided he'd had enough of the road, which is very understandable. But we used to spark off one another, and it was great, you know, musically. So in recent times, then in the last 10 or 15 years, I've been playing with John Carty a lot. And myself and John have we've duet albums out as well, and with Artie McGlynn, yeah.
Because I was going to ask you, because the fiddle and flute thing, I mean, you mentioned Peter Horan and Fred Finn, and then you've done albums with Sean Keane, there's been Tommy Peoples, now there's, yeah, John Carty. What brings you back to that combination all the time?
I just love the combination. I've recorded a few bits and pieces with Frankie Gavin as well, which might surface at some stage, reasonably soon, I hope. They're sitting there for a couple of years now, but we'll get them out. They're interesting. Yeah. But I just love it. And I suppose that's what I was reared with, you know. I mean, I was reared listening to Fred Finn and Peter Horan. They were both friends of my father's, you know, because my father came from that area. And then, of course, he had the flute players like Seamus Tansey and Joseph McDermott, and, you know, he had really great players in the area, you know. Mm. Willie Corman then was from Carnery. He was a lovely fiddle player, and I got a lot of tips from him, and he used to make little reel-to-reel tapes for me and put some tunes on them for me. Yeah.
Terms of the partnerships, like you have musical partnerships that you've had with people that go back a long time, you know, in order for a duet, especially a duet, to work, you know, like with you with Sean Keane, or you with John Carty, or you with
and Tommy,
or with Artie, like there has to be a really deep understanding, doesn't there, between the two people?
Well, I think so, you know, to really make it work, you know, I think. I think that's true, you know. I think it's true, you know. And so with Frankie as well, Frankie Gavin.
When do you know that it's working? When do you know it's working with somebody?
When they're listening to you, and they're listening to what you're at, and you know, you sense it, and you're listening to what they're doing, and they sense it, and it makes a third force, if you like, you know. It just makes it a third force, I suppose you could call it, for want of a better expression. You know, the two instruments lock in and complement one another, and I think that's the basis for good music. You know? I don't know. I don't know how to put a definition on it. But really, what I do is I listen to a tune and put my 2 feet up in the room, and I'd fool around with it, and let it take its own shape, let it take its form, and that would be the basis of the tune for me. Then, you know, and a lot of that would be influenced, of course, by the fiddle players. You know, and pipers as well, of course. Yeah, but it's good fun, and I just listen to everybody. I listen to the pipers, listen to accordion players, listen to mostly fiddle players, of course, but there you go.
I was surprised, I don't know if you were, that it's been 22 years since you last made a solo album.
Since my last confession. Yeah, don't ask me why, you know, because I don't know either. It's just one year follows into another. But the Chieftains were very busy, but then I was doing little bits and pieces on the... I call it Things to Do When You're 70 CD. Yeah. No, it's over the years, like, tunes bubble away in the back of your head, and you say, oh, God, I must record that sometime. And you don't, you know, and one year follows the next, and then I might be doing an album with John Carty and Artie, or, you know, or whoever, and doing bits and pieces, you know, you keep putting it on the back boiler, and I just decided last year, the hell with it, I'm going to go for it. And glad I did anyway, so.
The sea is a big character in this album, in the tune titles, and the cover, and the photograph. There's a photograph of yourself on your boat, which is called...
Eccentric Lady. Yeah.
So the sea obviously plays a big role in your life.
Well, it always has, yeah. And don't ask me why. Like, I come from Ballyhadreen. Like, it's in the centre of the country, with a lot of bog around it. But a great place indeed. But... when I went to Dublin, then I used to swim a lot out in Portmarnock, and I'd love to swim and still do. And when we got married, we bought our house in Portmarnock, and so I was looking out at the sea every day. And then I moved to Ennis. Then after I was 17 years in Dublin, and moved to Ennis. I have friends down in Ennis, and I lived there for 7 years. But when I was there, as well as playing lots of music with people from East Clare and North Clare and West Clare and whatever, I joined a Sabaqua club, so I was into scuba, so I was doing that for years as well. And I sort of went from there then to, I bought a boat, a small boat. I just got the bug. Yeah, I suppose.
I was looking on this lovely new album that you have, Back to the Island. There are lots of the old tunes on it, tunes that you learned from your father, tunes that you probably would have known for years. They're kind of like your anchor tunes or something, are they?
In a way, I suppose, yeah. There's one, The Girl I'll Never Forget. It's a nice tune. It's, you know, I had my... late wife and my late daughter in mind when I played that, and it's a nice tune, lovely tune.
The new album, Matt, you go back to some of your old friends who are playing with you.
Oh, the Archer, Artie McGlynn, of course, and Brian McGrath. I've been playing with Brian for a long time as well. He's an incredible banjo player, but he's also equally great accompanist and keyboards. And then I have, he's a remarkable man, young man, Joe McNulty. He plays Bowron on it. He's an incredible Bowron player. But he's a brilliant fiddle player, and he's only 21. Like, and he is the head of an old fella, the way he plays. He's great, and a lovely, lovely, lovely man.
I have read about this story, but I am intrigued. Just before we go, was your flute actually played up in space? Is that true?
Of course it was, yeah. And
tell me the story about your flute being played in space.
There's video evidence of it. On YouTube, yeah. I know, playing in Houston, Paddy Maloney's son was with NASA at the time, Paddy, and he brought a bunch of a few people from NASA to one of the concerts, and Katie Coleman, she's an astronaut, she was in the company, and I got to know her, and because she was a flute player, of course, and we've become friends, and still are. We're great friends over the years. But then when she got the opportunity to go on the space station, like she was went up for 6 months, so she asked myself and Paddy, she asked Paddy for a whistle, and she asked me, could she borrow one of my flutes to take with her? So I gave her my E-flat Hawks, very old, it was about 1880s, I think, around that. It was built around that time. The one I did my first solo album on, actually. But she took that up with her, and so I was good. She used to ring me from the space station. It's mad, you know. I got this phone call on my mobile.
Yeah, from space.
From the space station. Yeah, she's gas.
Well, long may it continue, Matt. Long may the tours continue.
Long may the music continue. And thanks a million for talking to me today.
Thanks, Aoife. I appreciate it. Now.
And that was the voice of Matt Molloy ending that programme. Thank you very much for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcasts. So if you want to hear the full versions, just go to rte.ie/Radio 1. This programme was first broadcast on December the 16th, 2018. Till the next time, Gur Míle Maithí agus slán. Thank you.